God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. This is the Gospel of John.
You can picture an octopus in your mind right now. That'll be a helpful image for you to help you stay with me all the way through this conversation. We're going to spend probably about 10 minutes kind of eating the head of the octopus, and then from there we're going to deal with all of the legs, because there's lots of implications for what the head is. So if you don't pay attention to the head and you wake up wondering what world you're in, that's on you, and you've wasted a dangerous drive to church. Stay with me through the head, and then once we get into the legs, you'll be really uncomfortable. I promise you that. Metaphors are all through the scriptures. Jesus uses them often in his teaching style, and they're great ways to draw people in because they understand kind of the metaphor, the images, the people, places, the spaces that he is trying to describe. And in John 10, he uses the metaphor of a shepherd. And for most of us, I would be willing to bet we did not grow up in a school system where, like, kind of, what do you want to be when you grow up? That shepherd was there that you checked. It was, you know, police officer, nurse, teacher, whatever the case might be. But shepherds certainly was not one of those boxes. And most of us have no idea what this world is even like. We don't witness it at all, by and large. When we do see it, it's kind of like on an Amish postcard, and that's about as far as it goes for us. But in first century Jerusalem, and still in Jerusalem to this day, that role of a shepherd is a pretty profound image that Jesus uses to invoke this next conversation that he has with his people. And shepherds in Jesus' day, and still to this day, were known for having an incredibly profound, as weird as this is going to sound, a very close relationship with their sheep, and in turn, the sheep with their shepherd. The shepherd would talk with them. The shepherd would come to understand his flock. The flock would recognize the shepherd's voice. The shepherd would often sing and play a flute or something along those lines to grow this relationship from shepherd to sheep relationship. One of the authors I was reading, getting ready for this morning, when he was in Jerusalem, there was two images that really captured his attention in profound ways, which made John 10 come alive in a whole other way. The first picture was watching a shepherd lead his flock of sheep through the busy streets of Jerusalem, like the streets today of Jerusalem. It's not goat paths anymore. It literally is sidewalks along freeways, and sheep are kind of walking along, unfazed by traffic and trucks and tourists, and on and on and on it goes. They just followed the voice of their shepherd as the shepherd led them from the pen to wherever it is that he was taking them, and they were completely comfortable making that journey. The other image that was quite profound, and you can actually kind of Google this and see it getting played out in real time, is sheep are stored, that's not the right word, but essentially they're put in a large pen together. And to the onlooker, that looks like, oh, that's one big giant flock of sheep or one big herd of sheep. But in actual fact, there are many different kind of groups of sheep in this one giant pen. And he watched the morning where the shepherds arrived. There was four or five of them. And shepherd one kind of took his turn, and he got to the gate of the sheep and began calling to his sheep in this large group of sheep. And I've looked at some sheep before, and it's like a whole group of identical twins. Like, there's really not a lot of features. I'm like, oh, that's mine, that's yours. Like, they all look the same. They all have the same look. It's all the same. And yet the shepherd begins to call his sheep. And the sheep in the pen all begin to bounce around, kind of get out of the way, as the sheep that belong to that shepherd that's calling make their way out of the pen, while all other sheep stay inside. Shepherd 2 arrives, begins calling. His sheep line up, follow him out of the pen. Shepherd 3, and so on. And it really is fascinating to watch the sheep organize themselves and respond to the voice that they recognize, that they trust, and lead them out into the pasture where they're going to go for that particular day. This is the image all the way through John chapter 10 as Jesus invokes this shepherd-sheep analogy to his people that they will understand because this is very much a part of their world. So here's the question that we're going to wrestle through this morning as it relates to sheep, shepherd, voice, us, issues of salvation. We're going to throw it up on the screen, and here it is. How can I know if I'm experiencing the salvation that Jesus has freely provided for me? Now, if you're anything like me, I suspect we're always in this space of like, how am I doing? Like, how are we doing in this game of faith? Am I a follower? I remember as a kid growing up, I probably said the Lord's or the sinner's prayer like 177 times. Like, if you were young and you're like, dear Jesus, forgive my sin, come into my heart. Like, did you ever say that prayer multiple times when you were a kid? No? Okay, then none of you are like me. And I was nervous that maybe he didn't hear it day one. So I kind of went back to the conversation. In case you were busy last night and you didn't hear my prayer, please kind of come into my life and save me, blah, 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 blah. What's interesting as I grew is there is no such prayer recorded in the scriptures anywhere. None. There is never a space where, and some of you are like, yes, there is. It's when we confess with our mouth that Jesus is Lord, will we say, that's yes, but that's not a prayer and a box that you check in the back of a New Testament Bible, which is what some of you are going to go to and email me in that space. It's not recorded in the scriptures. A sinner's prayer that we were taught to say when we were little. The question of whether or not I am participating in what Jesus has freely provided for me is grounded in this conversation right here this morning in John chapter 10. So let's move into this. And before we really answer the question, there is some work to do. Number one, Jesus in John 10, 1 through 18, again, through images, highlights who he is through two pictures. He describes that he is the gate. And if you do any reading, and I don't know why you would do any reading on shepherds and gates and pens, but if you do, you would discover that the gate is a key kind of component to the sheep's safety. Shepherd brings them into the pen through one gate and through one gate alone, and when they're inside, they are fine. And Jesus says, I'm the gate. And the gate offers protection and safety, and the only way that you can get inside this pen is through this particular gate. And Jesus, in many of his ways, says, I am the gate. I am the only way in to a safe place when it comes to life and what's coming after life. He says it a little bit later in John 10, where he says, I have come that you might have life. Or that's actually in John 10. The one I meant to reference was, I am the way, truth, and life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Jesus, in multiple spaces in John's gospel, says, if you want to get in on a relationship with God the Father, I'm it. There is no other way for you to play in this arena. Despite whatever we want to say, we are confronted with Jesus' words where he says, if you want to experience this, you have to come through me. You have to come through this gate, through my life, because I am the way in to this particular pen where you're safe, you walk with God, you know him, he calls you by name, you recognize his voice, and so on and so forth. The other image that he brings forth in this particular chapter is that he is the good shepherd. And this good shepherd, in first century kind of Jerusalem days, the good shepherd or the shepherds that love their sheep would protect them, would guide them, take them to places where they would feed and flourish and grow and be strengthened. And same is true of our good shepherd, Jesus Christ. He guides us, he protects us, he leads us into spaces where we would flourish well in life. And these are two images that we see all the way through John chapter 10. And these are, again, more of the same that we've seen since John 8, where Jesus now begins to clearly say to anyone who will listen, I'm God. He began it in John 8, where he says, before Abraham was, I am. And people get really angry at him for declaring that he is God, and the anger and the hostility towards Jesus kind of increases a little bit. In John 9, Dana last week highlighted that Jesus, I am the light of the world. And again, Jesus is making profound statements that ratchet up the hostility and the anger towards him, because he's making statements that are profoundly significant and offensive to all of those who will hear. And he does it again in John 10. I am the gate. I am the good shepherd. I am different from all other shepherds because I am the shepherd that will actually lay down his life for his sheep. No other shepherds that you know of or have even heard of will ever do that. They are nothing more than thieves and robbers, and they will bail on you when life gets difficult. I will not, because I am the good shepherd. And these are the images all the way through John 10 that Jesus is using to, again, highlight his identity. So back to this question of how can I tell if I'm experiencing the salvation that Jesus has freely provided for me? Well, the answer is coming, and it's rather significant. We're going to throw it up here in a minute on the screen, but there are three other spaces I need you to hear as we go through John 10. There are three pictures that Jesus uses all the way through: his voice, robbers and thieves, and the shepherd, or the sheep respond to the shepherd's voice. They're going to be up there. There they are. In verse 3, 3, 5, 14, and 16, Jesus invokes my voice. My voice, my voice, my voice, my voice. You'll know it. You'll recognize it. You'll hear it. You'll respond to it. In 10:1, 10:5, 10:8, 10:10, he highlights thieves and robbers, thieves and robbers, thieves and robbers. They lead astray. They bring death. They bring harm. My sheep don't even recognize the stranger's voice. They will run away from the stranger's voice. And then he goes even further with his sheep respond to his voice in verse 4, verse 5, verse 8, verse 14, verse 16. Jesus bangs away on this question: how do you know if you're participating in what Jesus has freely provided for everyone to participate in? And he leans into the space, and this is going to make some of you uncomfortable, which is great, because in these spaces of uncomfortability, we are forced to wrestle with what Jesus says over our lives, and we kind of sit in that space. And Jesus is ultimately saying this: any other voice that you listen to that's not mine, they are a thief and a robber. In this context, he's talking about Pharisees and other religious leaders, but when you move it out of that context, it's the same thing. Any other voice that you listen to that shapes your life is nothing more than a thief and a robber. The great verse from John 10 is the verse where it says, a thief comes to only steal, kill, and destroy. And wrongfully, we have attributed that verse as if Jesus is talking about Satan. And those realities are true of Satan, but that's not who he's referencing here. He's referencing other men and women of his day that lead people away from who he is. And the same is true to this day. People in our lives that speak something other than Jesus' voice is nothing more than a thief and robber. And that thief and robber, if we follow their advice and their words, that shepherd, it brings us harm in this life in significant ways. The question that we've asked is answered in these passages where Jesus says this. Am I listening to the Good Shepherd's voice? This is the evidence of Jesus living inside of you. If you wrestle through the question, how do I know if I'm participating in what Jesus has freely provided in his life, death, resurrection? How do I know this? If you reference a prayer you said when you were 5 or 9 or 12 or 30 or whatever, you're not going to find that. The evidence of our response to the Good Shepherd is, am I doing what the Good Shepherd tells me to do? That is the evidence. And it's not just Jesus who says this. Paul says it in every letter. John, this guy, again in 1st and 2nd John say it. Peter says it. If we are sons and daughters of the Good Shepherd, we know his voice, we hear his voice, and we do what his voice says. If you're struggling with kind of where am I in this whole thing, like, is Jesus my good shepherd? Is he the one I'm following? Well, do we know his words, and do we allow his words to shape our life. And we're going to get into some of these examples here in a moment because we have just completed eating the head of the octopus. The question is, how do I know if Jesus is in fact my good shepherd and I am participating in what he has freely provided for everyone on the planet? His answer, it's not mine. It's his answer is, do you know my voice? And are you listening to it? Are you doing what I ask you to do in my instructions, which is the evidence of Christ living inside of you? Here are some things. I'm going to paint some examples because there's lots of implications for this reality that Jesus has now painted all through our lives. And we as sons and daughters of God need to be a people that can distinguish and recognize his voice in the midst of a lot of voices that want our attention, that want to make us think and believe and live certain ways. So we're going to kind of go through some fun examples of how the sheep of the good shepherd actually can pick out his voice in the midst of a lot of other voices. Here's example one, just for kicks and giggles. Here we go. Thieves and robbers tell us, in our context and culture, they tell us that a woman's worth is in her body. Commercial after commercial, picture after picture, movie after movie, music video after music video, they all clearly communicate that a woman's value is connected to her physical appearance. This is the voice of robbers and thieves in our world. And men and women both believe this to be true. They have allowed the voice of thieves and robbers to shape their understanding of who they are, and it brings into their life frustration, death, suffering, brokenness on a variety of levels. But sheep of the good shepherd, male and female, we know his voice, or we ought to know his voice. And the good shepherd says, no, that actually isn't where her value is at all. Her value comes in the fact that she's been created in the image of God. So as male sheep, as a male sheep of the good shepherd, every time we look at a woman, do you actually view her as someone that God has beautifully created in his image? Because when you do, it actually shapes your thoughts around her. It actually changes the way you would approach and engage and speak to and love on and honor and value when we understand the Good Shepherd's voice as it comes to this issue. As a female sheep of the Good Shepherd, every time you look in the mirror, what do you see? Do you allow the Good Shepherd's voice to shape the reflection that you are fearfully and wonderfully made? That you are a precious daughter of the King? Or is it that voice choked out by, I don't look this way, I'm not in this space, I struggle with this, I wish this was different about me, whatever the case might be. Do we allow the voice of the Good Shepherd to shape our understanding of this particular issue? Another example, thieves and robbers tell us that we should buy a particular product right now. That unless you have this product right now, you won't be happy. In fact, this product is so good, it's so good that we will let you pay for it for the next 18 months. And if you don't pay for it, that then there's like 29.5% interest, and that couch that you paid $400 for is actually $7,000, and you're stuck with a very old, broken, dirty couch. Buick, of all companies, Buick has this whole kind of commercial right now. And if you drive a Buick, I'm sorry, I'm not making fun of Buick, but I kind of am. Buick has this whole ad right now called 24 Hours of Happiness Test Drive. And here's the premise. You drive our car for 24 hours. You'll experience a happiness in your life that is unique to Buick. So that experience that you've had in 24 hours, the only way you can have that last is by the Buick. And there's a part of me where I'm like, it's a Buick. Like, it's not even a nice car. Like, if you drive one, I'm sorry. Like of all the companies to build this ad, it's Buick. And it's a great lie of thieves and robbers. A great lie of thieves and robbers, because we honestly, we line up underneath of these kind of ads that kind of draw our hearts into spaces. But the voice of the good shepherd knows that that's not true. We were able to distinguish thieves and robbers from actual truth on our life. The Good Shepherd says that happiness, that what you're really after, what you're really looking for, comes when you actually walk in a relationship with me. That what your heart is longing for is not in your material things, but is in this relationship with me, where you walk with me, I walk with you, we talk, we chat, we grow, and all those things that you're after, you will actually begin to recognize that thank you for the new car, for the house, whatever it is, but they are nothing more than a gift from the Good Shepherd who loves you. And we don't replace the role of that thing to be the Good Shepherd of our life and look to that thing as though it ultimately is what can satisfy our lives. Third example, thieves and robbers, they tell us that you need to put out on the first date. And if you're over 50 and you're unsure of what put out means, ask your grandkids and they'll tell you. Thieves and robbers say that unless you get sexual, you're never really going to know if you're compatible. That is a tremendous lie. Sheep of the Good Shepherd know that his voice, the Good Shepherd says, that if you're going to grow in great relationships, there is an emotional closeness that's profoundly important in any relationship. You're going to know that he says, There's a fusing together of your economics with your funds that this has to happen. There's a voice that says there's a mental closeness that we grow in relationship if it's going to be great. And when we trust ourselves with these area of our lives, then we trust each other with sexual closeness. And ironically enough, these all collide on the wedding day. On the wedding day. Make no mistake. The evidence of thieves and robbers that speak into our culture are obvious. It's all around us. It's all around us, and it's always shaping our lives in one way or another. But as sons of Christ, daughters of Christ, do we have the ability to recognize the voice of the Good Shepherd in the midst of all other voices? It's that image of the shepherds who go to the pen and start calling out their sheep in the midst of five other shepherds' voices. Can you pick it out in this world? Here's another octopus leg. Some of you here this morning, you are new sheep. You're brand new to this whole game of faith. You have just made a decision in the last few months or the last year about following Jesus. And honestly, from a place of honest struggle, you don't know his voice yet. You've lived your life your way for 30-some-odd years or more or less, and you have become so accustomed to thieves' and robbers' voices, you're legitimately unsure, is this true or not? Is this true or not? Is this what Jesus would have me say? And when we watch TV or we read newspaper ads or whatever the case may be, we're unsure whose voice really is this. Just to give you some examples, when we watch the news, and I'm a news watcher because I find it hilarious, but we get on CNN or Fox News or CBC, and they start talking about kind of the American or Canadian dream, because they're very, very similar, although it gets played out differently in each country. But we hear the guests on the panel talk about education, hard work, kind of growth in material things, this upward social mobility, and this is kind of the dream life that we can experience here and now. And if you're someone who's brand new to the game of faith, you're like, I don't know if this is true or not. Like, is this really the kernel of what the Good Shepherd would say, or is this a voice from a thief and a robber? Or we would get on a TED Talk and we would listen to someone talk about the root of happiness. I watched one this week, as did 23 million other people. And the speaker was highlighting that there is some new research that says that if you can succeed in the workplace, then you've tapped into the source of where true happiness comes from. And as a new sheep, we kind of like, oh, is that true? Like, I know work matters, but like, is this really true? And we find ourselves legitimately asking the question, is this the voice of the Good Shepherd? Well, if you're a new sheep, I want you to allow me to speak into your life, and this isn't kind of like I'm making this up. I've practiced these over my life, continue in some ways, because they're in the scriptures. The first thing I would encourage you to do if you're a new sheep is this. This is just a general rule to live by. If someone other than the Good Shepherd is saying it, just assume that it's wrong. If someone other than Jesus is saying it, just assume that it's wrong. It might be right, but for your life's sake, just assume that it's wrong. Then engage the scriptures. What does my good shepherd actually say about these matters? Where can I find his words? Well, the Gospels particularly. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, kind of mill around in there, spend some time, get to know the words of Christ on matters of life and living, and you will begin to discover the voice of the good shepherd in your life. The third thing I would encourage you to do is this. Find a church to go to, and not just any church. A church that actually puts forth the words of the good shepherd on a daily, weekly basis. There are lots of churches. There's lots of churches that don't do this. And it pains me because it leads people away from Christ. Find a church that talks about the words of the Good Shepherd on an ongoing basis so that you might come to recognize his voice and rhythms and patterns for your life and for your living. And the fourth thing is this, and this is born out of my own who I am. I love to ask questions. Some of you love to ask questions. Ask questions. If you're new to the game of faith, there is a language that sheep of God already have in play that is a different language. We use big terms that we understand, but brand new people are like, what does that mean? What are you talking about? And ask the questions about these issues so that you might come to discover, hear, recognize the voice of the Good Shepherd in your life. So that's if you are a new sheep, I would encourage you in this way. If you are a sheep like me that has made mistakes, you are a follower of God and you've made mistakes, because this is where we want to go when it comes to the question, how do I know that I'm participating in the life that the Good Shepherd has freely provided? We instantly want to run to, well, it's not based on my performance. I know that. However, make no mistake, my obedience to the Good Shepherd matters. Not because I say it matters, because Jesus highlights, this is how you know you are mine. John also says it a little bit later, and it's not on the screen. I'm just going to read it for you. This is from 1 John chapter 2, starting at verse 1, and this is what he says. He says this. This is to the sheep who make mistakes. In other words, you all. Okay, here we go. I write this to you so that you will not sin. But when you do sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. He is the atoning sacrifice for our sins, and not only for ours, but for the sins of the whole world. We know, this is John saying what Jesus has just said in this particular passage. We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commands. Now, when I make a mistake this afternoon, because it will, chances are, happen this afternoon, that action that's sinful because of Jesus Christ in my life does not own me. I'm not consumed by its guilt. I'm not consumed with shame, because my good shepherd has dealt with that particular sin as he has with all sins in all this world, in all of our lives. And in this moment, I need you to hear this, because this matters greatly. Do you know that a lot of Jesus' instruction on your life is actually connected to the moment when you have failed, when you have sinned, when you struggle with something? He doesn't give rules of like, don't ever do this. And then we do it, and then we're like, oh, jumpins, now what? Like, that's normally not his instruction. The instruction is, do you struggle with anger? Yeah. Then I'm asking you to do this by faith. Do you struggle with lust? Yeah. Then I'm asking you to do this by faith. Do you struggle with greed? Yes. Okay. Then I'm asking you to do this by faith. Do you struggle with revenge for enemies? Yes. Then I'm asking you, he is creating a space of brokenness and sin that says, if you are my sheep and you struggle with these areas, do this by faith for your heart's sake, for my glory's sake, do this. Does that make sense? Because I need you to hear this. Jesus does not outline a life for you to be perfect, because that's unfair, because we will fail. He outlines a way out from a sin that you struggle with, that I struggle with. If you are my sheep and you fail on anger, then I'm asking you to do this. I'm asking you to do this. There's this constant conversation while we are in our sin, in our brokenness. As a Christ follower, we do this because the Good Shepherd's voice has told us to do it. This is a mark of whether or not you are a Christ follower, a sheep of the Good Shepherd or not. It is unacceptable to simply say, you're just a forgiven sheep. Foolishness. That's true, but it's half true. There's a life we are called to live in Christ by the Good Shepherd's voice, that he gives us the ability to do it by his power in us for our joy and for his glory. As sheep of the Good Shepherd, I am not defined by my sin because of what my Good Shepherd has done for me. But I want to know what he says so that I don't have to stay in it and struggle through it anymore. Now, that's for the sheep that make mistake, which is all of us. And if you are an old sheep, and old is in quotation marks because I'm not talking age. I'm talking about you've been doing the game of faith for a long time. This will be the harshest thing I've ever said to you. And I've been doing this for 12 years here. And if you get angry with this, I defer to my second point, deal with your anger, because Jesus tells you to deal with your anger. We'll just move into this. Some of you here this morning, after years of following the Good Shepherd, it's rather amazing that the Good Shepherd's voice hasn't changed your beliefs, attitudes, and actions in any way, shape, and form. It's incredibly ironic that somehow in your thinking, in your space, you have managed to take the voice of the Good Shepherd and to make his voice yours. It amazes me that men and women who declare themselves to be followers of Jesus say the same thing as the world says, and somehow that's what Jesus says on the matter. It is absolutely foolish to suggest that this is true. When Jesus comes into our life, there ought to be, in spaces, whether it be a short-term or a long-term, visceral changes in our lives because God has now entered it. And if God's ideas ironically line up with yours, holy cow, that is a dangerous space to be in. Give you some examples of what I'm talking about. And this is where you're going to push back through email and small group, which is great. The voice of the Good Shepherd does not line up with the Second Amendment. They do not go hand in hand. The voice of the Good Shepherd does not at all endorse seeking revenge of any kind in all of its forms. Any kind in all of its forms. The voice of the Good Shepherd does not line up with the Conservative Party of Canada, so don't try to make it sound like it. It doesn't line up with the NDP, the Republican, the Democrat. It doesn't line up with any of the institutions, parties, and spaces that we see get played out in our world. And when we try to make the voice of the Good Shepherd line up in the camp that we love, all you have done, and when you hear this, all you have done is revealed what matters to you most. Your citizenship of your country, whether it be Canada or the United States, or you are actually a son of the king in the citizenship of the kingdom of heaven, because they are very different things. If you value your space, property, material things, your pursuit of happiness, and you will get in line behind ridiculous robbers and thieves that preserve this, you have not read at all the scriptures, and you haven't seen at all how it turns out for the early first Christ followers. You know they all died, right? Horrible deaths. They did not get richer and prettier and hotter till they died. They purged themselves of what it meant to be a Jew. They purged themselves of what it meant to be a Gentile, what it meant to be a Roman. And they lived their life in the context of these dynamics and said, I am a Christ follower first, even if it means my life. And somehow, We forget at all the whole first 500 years of church life. And so Jesus is a Republican or he's a conservative under Kevin O'Leary. He's not at all. He's not at all. And if after years of following Jesus, there's nothing in your life that is the exact opposite of what you used to believe, then you're actually following the voices of thieves and robbers. Because I've yet to meet anyone who is a legitimate Christ follower that can't articulate, oh, I used to think this and live this way, and now I live this way. When I was 19, the 19-year-old version of this 38-year-old would look at me and say, sell out. The 38-year-old looks at the 19-year-old and says, idiot. If Jesus has not completely redefined significant areas of your life, your understanding of life, how it gets played out in the context of life, you are following the voices of thieves and robbers that want to do nothing but bring you harm. When Jesus comes into the world and says, the road is narrow that leads to life, wide is the road that leads to destruction. Listen, if you're marching in the masses of the world, you're not on the narrow road. The narrow road, just so we're clear, Jesus' words, those who hear these words of mine and put them into practice, these are mine. These are mine. Last night, my wife and I watched a very interesting movie called Hacksaw Ridge. Have you seen it? If you want to find out what it might look like to be a Christ follower in the context of what everyone else says, that's a great show to watch. There is a peculiarness to how we live our life as a follower of God. And it ought to be obvious in a world that says certain things that appear to be so normal and accepted, and yet enter the stream of the Christ follower, and all of a sudden there should be collisions all the way along your life. By faith, I follow the voice of the Good Shepherd. By faith, I follow the voice of the Good Shepherd. By faith, I follow his voice. I know his voice. I recognize his voice wherever it might take me. Because he protects me. He shields me. And he's like, well, how does he protect me if I die? Because you get to go be with him, which is far better than whatever this world has to offer. Far better than anything this world has to offer. One more thing. Just because some people say they claim to know the voice of the Good Shepherd doesn't mean they know it. Example, do you remember the Orlando shootings that happened a few months back? The Sunday after this, pastors all over the United States and Canada took to the pulpits and said these phrases. The only tragedy is that more of them were not killed. Or this one. Christians should not be mourning the death of 50 sodomites. Or my personal favorite, and I'm being sarcastic, is when pastors say, I'm kind of upset that he didn't finish the job. These are men, they are men, that somehow get into the pulpit and are trying to reflect the voice of the Good Shepherd, and it just doesn't line up. It doesn't line up. And listen, all of my words to you don't line up. You must know the voice of the Good Shepherd. And speak into my life. Like, you said that didn't really line up with what I read in the text. Like, listen, I'm not perfect. Like, I love working in the staff that we have because there's days where I'll go into my office and spend 4 hours by myself, and I'm a logical, rational guy, but it doesn't mean that my logic and my rationale is right, and there's times where I'll emerge after being locked in there for 4 hours with a Sharpie marker, and I'll say, hey, what do you think about this? And Gordon and Dana and Tyler and Stephen are like, that's not right. I'm like, but why not? And then my stubbornness sets in, and I'm like, well, this is why. I'm like, that's not true. And then I'm like, no, wait a minute, that's actually true. Like, what they're saying is true. Our voice as, shall we say, temporary shepherds over the flock, our voice must line up with the shepherd's voice. And just because someone says they are doesn't mean that they really are. But do we have the voice to recognize these kinds of moments in our lives? The point of John 10 is really simple. The mark of you and me participating in the life, the salvation that Jesus has freely provided to us, is when we, by faith, respond to his voice. Simple. The mark of whether or not you and I are participating in what Jesus has freely provided for everybody is when we, by faith, do what he asks us to do. Jesus says it about a dozen times. Paul says it almost in every letter that he writes. John says it in his books that he writes a little bit later on. Peter says it in his letters. There is a, well, we sing about it, trust and obey. A great hymn of faith. Some of you don't even know it, but the lyrics are just what we're talking about here this morning. I'm going to invite Dana and team to come forward. We're going to move into our communion time that really highlights some of the stuff that we are talking about this morning. And while they come and while they begin to play, I want to read to you a passage of Scripture that really gets to the heart of the whole sheep-shepherd space that describes our following of our good shepherd as we do life. And normally, this passage is read at funerals, which I understand why, but it's not written with the intent to be read at funerals. It's actually to be read every day in our life because he is the good shepherd and we are his sheep. Let me read this to you. I'd ask you to just close your eyes and bow your heads. Let these words, which most of you will know emphatically, let these words ring true, not in death, but in your life right now. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Sid and crew, we're going to pass out the communion elements while we sing. We're going to come back and talk about our great shepherd. Let's sing together.